TT Book essayist and producer Veronica Rickert has had her own close encounter with whales on a first visit to SeaWorld in San Diego. For Veronica, laying eyes on an orca was stranger than she'd ever imagined.
I lost my mind at SeaWorld. In Shamu Stadium, a basic array of cement bleachers flanking a tank of swimming pool blue water. The light that morning was surreal, making Wisconsin sunlight look like an off-brand, the kind sold out of someone's trunk in Eau Claire. The whole setup was kind of bizarre, too. Here we all were, about to squeal with delight, while the most dangerous predator in the world jumped through a hoop or something before we all shuffled out again to eat some nachos. I should have been enjoying the pre-orca tingles like everyone else. But there I was, unable to enjoy the moment, alone with my dark thoughts. And Jacques Cousteau. In some of my bleaker moments as a child, I cursed his name, his professional calling, his plucky little retreating flippers flapping past the giants of the deep. Why blame a visionary Frenchman who is indisputably hailed as a hero for his undersea documentaries and marine conservation efforts? Because he made hours of my childhood a maritime hell.
In the Antarctic, we have seen very few large whales, but packs of killer whales still thrive.
Years later, I can still see myself watching something by Cousteau on TV through clawed fingers on that bastion of nature-induced terror otherwise known as PBS. Inspired by Cousteau, my mom brought home an immense whale book with Titanic color photographs. I moved it to a faraway room when she wasn't looking. During Baz, I scrunched myself into the far corner, away from the sinister drain, which at any moment would open and release one of the pea-eyed great white sharks circling just beneath our Midwestern bathroom. It would devour me in two greedy gulps, eyes rolled back into its head while it chomped in gastronomic delight, like Julia Child on a beef marrow bender. Some children have monsters under the bed, vampires in the closet, boogeymen beneath the blankets piled up in the corner. I had killer whales and sharks. Every time I closed my eyes, I was tormented by unwilling visions of their sleek bodies, tricked out in form-fitting pleather, swimming reconnaissance around the perimeter of my mind. Around the time I was in fifth grade, we visited the Apple Valley Zoo in Minnesota, famous for being one of the few Midwestern zoos to house actual flesh-and-blood whales, the small and sociable beluga. As we made the descent to the underground whale observatory, it grew dim. The only light filtered through thousands of metric tons of water. Sliding into view, there were the whales, languidly spinning upside down or shooting past at startling speed. In a beat, they twist out of sight around the bend in their enclosure, like albino quarks, ceasing to exist when I lost my faith. It was too much, too soon, and in the deep of the night, I had nightmares about the light shivering its way through the water, the black eyes of the white whales. But Cousteau wasn't through with me yet. Instead, he slipped in through a side door that cracked open on a meditation retreat on the West Coast when I was in my 20s. The retreat happened to be situated along a deliriously beautiful strip of California coast, tucked on a bluff above the Pacific Ocean. My mother was along, and being the avidest of birdwatchers, and apparently the most distractible of meditators, she always brought her binoculars along with her. We'd sit alongside each other, on cement benches, facing all that water, meditating, peeking at the ocean, then trying to meditate again, feeling the last of the day's sun on our faces. It was during one of these flash twilights that I heard a gasp and looked up to see my mom training her binoculars out to sea, past the surfers straddling their boards in the calm water, to bursts of silver gently erupting from the waves below. It was a pod of dolphins cruising the coast for a bedtime snack, bobbing in and out of the ocean's arms. Occasionally, an especially spry dolphin would blow off some steam by blasting out in a leap and diving below. Even without the binoculars, they were spellbinding. the surfers had spotted the dolphins, too, and were paddling out to meet them, going farther out to sea. After that, I read up on my subject. Turns out, dolphins don't have a perfect record either, just like the killer whales and sharks that had tormented me as a kid. It's been noted before that human beings are awkward bags of mostly water stuck on land. So maybe that's it. We came from the sea primordial, and that's where the water in us wants to return, at an atomic level, rendering us finely calibrated human divining rods, whether or not we choose to listen. It could be that Cousteau was on to something after all. His work was too graphic for my child's imagination, but he had seen something, too. Something human and divine all at once. Cousteau had brought me to the door of the other, where I stood, 1 foot in, 1 foot out, needing to name my fear but lacking the language. So I did what I could. I reduced the oceans to a level I could control and consume. I went to SeaWorld. As I sat that day, feeling the old uneasiness jostling around in my gut, 2 megascreen TVs powered up on either side of the orca tank. A melodious male voice was telling a story about a boy and the ocean. In the story, shot in black and white for maximum gravitas, the boy lived near the ocean. He dreamed of seeing an orca and carved an orca pendant made of wood, which he wore around his neck at all times. One day, the boy took his kayak out to sea, and you just knew something was going to happen. But in case you were a clueless landlubber, the music ballooned cinematically. The boy was paddling in his kayak out to sea, the orca pendant swinging from his neck. His eyes were trained on the waves, when suddenly a killer whale hurled itself out of the water next to the kayak. The boy was overcome with rapture, and the music reached an unbearable climax as the boy and whale seemed to have some kind of deeply soulful moment of recognition. As I blinked, the screens went dim. And a beat later, an actual orca exploded from the water a mere 5 rows away. Maybe it was SeaWorld's masterful pre-orca priming of the pump. Maybe it was the ghost of Cousteau finally set free. But as the real live orca sped past us, I had a good old-fashioned breakdown. There was weeping, gnashing of teeth, shivering. If I'd had a tunic on, I imagine I would have happily shredded it in the style of classical Greek tragedy. At the physicality of the whale right there in front of me, in all its speed and glory, the atoms in my body surged, rearranged themselves, drunk on electricity. The impossibility that I shared a planet with a species like the killer whale and had never really known or understood what that meant drowned my mind while I sat transfixed. Cousteau was right, I thought I heard a tiny French voice singing out. Cousteau was right. The orca blasting through air and water was, in some senses, an abomination of what a whale should be. Feel free to rent Free Willy for more on that topic. And yet, the trainers, the Chernobyl blue water, the applause, none of it could take away the essence of the being I saw before me. It was petrifying, but it was also lovely, like a cyclone or a rogue wave is beautiful even as it tears you apart. It was nature unmasked, both the exaltation of the dolphin and the gravity of the great white shark. The creative force of the world is something too big to hold in our minds. All we can do is promise not to look away. I staggered out of Shamu Stadium in shreds, my former self held together by skin and bones and something like biological destiny. A month or two after we saw the Shamu show, an orca bull named Tillicum killed a trainer at SeaWorld in Orlando, Florida, dragging her through the water like a toy and raising questions about whether or not it was hubris to have the world's most dangerous predator perform in captivity, whether we could ever really understand orca behavior well enough to prevent another such tragedy. The Indian poet Rabindranath Tagore wrote, You will never know the world aright until the sea itself floweth in your veins, until you are as familiar with the universe as your walk and table. Until that day, in Shamu Stadium, the oceans were an idea to me, the airy strand of a dream that slips away before it can be pinioned down on the specimen board of your mind. Now I know the color of an orca eye, the angle of its teeth, the tornadic thrash of its tail. Even if its mind is like the Louvre, with rooms inside I'll never see.
Veronica Rickert is a TT Book producer and essayist.